Hey guys, thanks for tuning into the show. Before we begin, I'd like to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, Tego. Tego is premium gear for the modern everyday athlete. They create products using emerging materials and textiles technology that feel good when you are at your sweatiest best. So whether it's a grueling workout or a long-ass flight, check out Tego. You can find out more at www.tego.fit/tpow. That's tego.fit/tpow. Thanks for listening, guys. What is the best way to actually get help from, you know, what is available in the market, right? There's a lot of gyms, there's a lot of studios, there's a lot of trainers, nutritionists, all sorts that, you know, there could be good ones, there could be bad ones. Right. I'm sure you have a lot of thoughts on that.
Yeah.
But how do we, you know, how does one go about finding the best help?
Well, here's the thing, though. I can go on answering this question for a long time, but because we've got little time, I'm going to keep it very sweet and I'm going to share the stats with you. Back in 2015, there was a survey done in Tier 1, Tier 2 cities where the results were that every 1% out of 7 was suffering from diabetes in Tier 1 and Tier 2 cities. And over the past 12 years, I am definitely sure that if not triple, the amount of gyms and studios and trainers and fitness professionals have doubled. And so that means that the demand of being fit has sort of been met.
Yeah.
But another survey was done in 2015, 2 years ago, and they figured out that every 1% out of 3 suffers from diabetes. So here's the thing. The fitness as an industry has grown so much.
The ecosystem has grown.
It's grown.
Yeah.
But the outcome hasn't been there. Yeah. So the result hasn't been there. So the thing is, what's missing is probably education and knowledge and probably lack of research.
Yeah.
I see a lot of professionals use a lot of thick books as guidelines for, you know, to give trainings to people. And some of them are on Western standards, right? They're not probably well enough researched on Indian people. And that's where the sort of differences come into play. Now, coming to your question, choosing the facility, you know, going or choosing a professional or choosing help, it has to be convenient, right? It has to be convenient in terms that you don't have to travel too long. You don't have to spend too much time getting there. So again, saving time, like I was looking at the gym that I was telling you about my journey.
Close by.
I looked at a place which was between my workplace and my house. So I could go there, I can work out, I could get ready and then get back to my hospital. So something of that sort. So convenience is definitely one of them, because if it's not convenient, you will lose interest and you will stop going to that place altogether. Secondly comes knowledge. So, I mean, to be able to know that the person that you're taking help with has enough knowledge, the best way is to just make sure that, you know, or check if they're educated enough. Do they hold the right kind of
certifications,
you know, certifications, or are they authentic enough, the certificates? So to have that understanding. So again, it comes, a person who going to a professional holds the responsibility of checking if he's going to the right sources, he's getting enough information, and also doing a little cross check after they get back home, probably, you know, sort of Google certain things that, you know, a trainer or a professional said, and then, you know, sort of knowing what exactly it is that could really sort of give them information and also help them choose the right thing.
For people that, you know, want fat loss or weight loss, I feel like sometimes people don't know the difference, right?
Yeah.
What is the advice you could give for people that want to lose weight but might actually be in their weight category?
If you look at the whole construct of weight loss versus fat loss, people are getting more aware of it. I feel, but it's still at a very slow pace. I can make someone lose their weight from 60 to 57 in a span of 4 days, in a span of 5 days, if I put them into a calorie deficit diet, whereby I ask them to eat a little less food, and if I ask them to drink less water, you know, they will lose a lot of weight. But that's not equivalent to losing fat, which takes a little bit longer to lose, and which is where your goal should be. So most of the programs, that any program that you follow, whether it's with your trainer, or whether you bought an online program or whatever it is, try and always go in for the fat loss workouts, because when you're trying to lose fat, you are automatically trying to lose weight. But this happens over time. But the other thing to keep in mind is that, you know, when you go in for a fat loss program, and if you've even bought a program online, let's say for instance you're an average male of 70 kilos, when you start losing fat and you've combined that with a little bit of strength workout, you're not going to lose a lot of weight. Whereby, even if you're losing fat, because you're doing strength training and building muscle, your weight is still going to be 70 kilos. Yeah. So this is a misnomer that, I'm going to the gym, I'm pushing all this weight, I'm doing all this cardio, but my weight is still the same.
Yeah.
It's not because you're not losing weight, it's because you're losing fat but gaining muscle.
And the correct metric to kind of keep that in check is the body fat percentage, right?
Yes, absolutely. It's one of the ways. But
what are some other ways that they can do that?
I think for fat loss, the best and the most, sort of convenient method is to trust the mirror, right? And, every fortnight, take your shirt off in front of the mirror and measure the different parts of your body. And just look at the way you look in the mirror.
Yeah.
Because you can't hide fat.
Yeah, you'd see a visible difference in the fat loss, right?
Absolutely. But you have to be, when it comes to fat loss, it's a very slow and incremental process. So you have to trust the process more than anything else.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen overnight.
The scale is not the only achievement calculator for you.
Not at all. Yeah, not at all. If you're trying to lose weight, yes, then for weight loss. For instance, if you're a very overweight male of 150 kilos and your goal is to get to 100 kilos, then you trust the scale.
Of course, yeah.
Because then obviously losing 50 kilos is a lot of weight.
Yeah.
And you will also look better at 100 kilos.
Obviously,
but if you're trying to lose fat, then no, you don't trust the scale at all.
So what does bouldering mean for you? What is your definition of bouldering? Even I hadn't heard of it when we started talking about this. Tell us a little bit about what your definition of bouldering is and how our audience can get an understanding.
So bouldering really is an offshoot of rock climbing. It started off as a training mode for people who wanted to climb longer routes. And now it's grown into this full-blown sport. But it's essentially scaling shorter walls up to 4.5 meters high. And you have a protection of a mat, which is a foot high. So if you fall, these mats are designed to take that kind of fall. It's more technical and power-based, if I may say so, than longer endurance routes or than climbing. And it's a bit like problem-solving.
So would you say it's like a smaller version, bite-sized version of longer climbs that you're kind of practicing?
To an extent, but I think it goes a lot beyond that because it's so short, it can be a lot more intense. It's a bit like sprinting is to marathon running. Bouldering started in Fontainebleau in France and it was mostly for alpine climbers.
So was it something that would get them kind of prepared for the main climb?
Yeah, exactly. Because, you can't go to a mountain to train climbing on the mountain on the cliff face. So you would climb small boulders and get strong there.
What is the current status of bouldering globally? Outside, obviously you said it started in France, but as a market, you guys practiced it, in different countries. I know when we talked earlier before the recording, you had mentioned that you've kind of experienced the sport and the activity in various countries and environments. So what is the current status of it? Like, how popular is it and how many people are kind of actively doing this right now?
Indoor bouldering is actually growing phenomenally. At least in Europe and the US, you see bouldering centers popping up every few months, and dedicated bouldering centers. These centers might not even have tall climbing walls anymore. So as a sport, I think it's really picking up. In India, we haven't seen much growth here at all. I think it's just the sheer lack of infrastructure that, no one's exposed to it.
Yeah.
And I think it comes from the accessibility of bouldering. You can go to a bouldering center with no prior experience of climbing and you can go up and, if you fall, there's massive crash pads and you land safely and you're okay. Whereas for climbing a tall wall, you have to go there, learn some technical information, how do you belay, how do you hold a rope, how do you tie in, all of these things are deterrents from people actually trying it. And that allows casual enthusiasts to come and try the sport.
So this is a topic that I was really excited to kind of talk to you about. You have a lot of knowledge and experience in pre and postnatal training and nutrition. So tell us a little bit about how you got into that and, some things that people should consider and how it kind of plays into the journey.
I've battled with this. I think I say that because I think I got into fitness quite late in my life and everyone was like, you've been married for so long now. Aren't you going to have children? So this topic was always on my mind and I was like, okay, I need to know a little bit more about fitness because, abroad, it doesn't matter. They still do it. They work out. Here, people around me were, becoming pregnant and they were like, that's it. Bed rest. You shouldn't do this. You shouldn't do that. So I was like, so that I think definitely because it's on the horizon for me as well. And I think I wanted to just know a bit more about it before I could sort of encourage people to do it. And I think when we started the studio, we were perhaps not as confident about it. And we had a few people approach us, but we were like, perhaps we should just know a bit more. And then once I did the certification, it's just... It was quite amazing because for them, their whole take on this was if fitness is something you were not doing prior to workout, then the best time to start is when you're pregnant. And the reason for that is because your body and your mind is open to change.
Yeah.
Everything is but in a mode of change. And to learn how to use your body at a time where it's ever changing in weight, in size, balance, if you don't know how to use it while you're pregnant, then moving forward when you have to carry this load for the first year, i.e. a moving load,
yeah.
This child is not going to be a single size and shape. It's going to change
constantly
every day.
Change, yeah.
And to know how to use your body, it's kind of like a preparation, right? So you're taking them through the steps, obviously at a totally different level, but you're still, you know, teaching them how to use their body. And I found that really cool as an idea. I mean, they even used like phrases as train them like football athletes, because they're going to be bending, picking, pushing, lifting an ever-changing load,
yeah.
Which is not going to be sitting still. Right now, you hold a dumbbell, it doesn't move by itself, right? But this child will be reaching, pulling, crying, pushing at the same time. I mean, you've seen it when
yeah.
you walk around. You see how people interact with their kids and you're just like, whoa. So, and at the same time, they might have to close the door. They might have to pick up a bag from the ground. You know, so it's a really interesting way if you think of it functionally. So I think that gave me a whole lot of confidence in this sort of like area. And it also made me feel how important it is. I mean, in India, people just, they sometimes literally are bedrest because they're just told that, you know, that's the safest way to be. But your life isn't going to be like that.
Yeah.
You're going to have to learn how to move. And if you're doing it at a time where you most need to, I can only imagine how many more complications will come from lifting, pushing, pulling without a strong core, without a strong back.
Yeah.
So yeah, so fitness, I think prenatal and postnatal, super important.
So going back to a little bit about what you mentioned about fuel, and you know, strength training as something that complements your running. Tell us a little bit about the role of diet, stretching and other workouts to actually improve your skills as a runner.
Yeah, and that's a very big focus of my program is also, one is to drive all the activity that I mentioned from the individual. The passion to run comes from the individual, but that's where I come in as a guide, is to kind of explain to them that it's not just about going out and running. Typically, your physiotherapy or your stretching exercises, they are about 30 to 40% of your week's running time, which is a lot.
Yeah.
Mostly people do 5 minutes of stretching or pre and maybe post. And the stretches also that they are doing are not really relevant to running, you know, or actually
yeah.
helping their body open up. So focusing on the right exercises, pre, not so much pre, but mostly post-run, is critical. And to spend 40% of your total week's runtime is something that no one does. And that's one of the focuses of the program, is to really focus on post-run stretch workout, or what we call post-run physio. And for that, we work with sports injury specialists who give body-specific physio to each runner. So every runner on the program has a totally different post-run routine. So it's a very personalized thing, and you have to work with a sports injury specialist to get what your body requires. So there's this physio stretching routine that every runner has to do after a run. That's critical. You cannot run without physio. You will get injured if you run without physio. Okay. Then there is obviously the strength training component that you touched on. That is also critical. Minimum 2 times a week, minimum, where you are doing just simple exercise. You don't need a gym membership. All you need is just an open space, 5 by 5 feet. You do some basic 3 to 4 sets of squats, lunges, calf raises, push-ups, tricep dips.
Yeah.
Simple 5 or 6 basic exercises that everyone knows. Or if you don't know them, just
easy
pull them up
them.
On YouTube
yeah.
and just do them. It'll take you 15 to 20 minutes. Very simple. Get your technique right. And so you do that twice a week. You do your physio. You do your running. And then obviously fueling. That's the last thing that kind of makes it the whole thing. Is you got to look at your diet. If you've been overweight or you've been having trouble keeping a good weight on, then you got to just cut back. Be conscious. But sometimes it's okay initially to not get so stressed about diet, because there's so much new you can take on at one time. So for a lot of my beginners, I tell them start running, number one, and make sure you do your physio. That's the first step to get them on. Then we start working on strength. Try building that on so that in 2 to 3 weeks, they start getting strength into the regime. Because I don't want to overload them with all this information at one go. So the idea starts slow. And this is to all your listeners also. Start moving, run, and do your physio, number one. That's how you start, right? Then start focusing, okay, now I feel I need to do some strength training. Add that in 3 to 4 weeks to your regime. And then start looking at your nutrition, what you're eating. And the beauty of endurance sports is because you're running out for 30 minutes, 40 minutes, people become conscious. And I've seen over time, I don't have to mention nutrition to a lot of my runners. They themselves become conscious and they are making the right decisions. I know 2 or 3 of my runners who become vegetarian just out of their own decisions. And that has helped them lose weight or just make them feel better. What I'm saying is all these things come with time, but you got to start.
How have you been able to kind of leverage? I know you guys are very active on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
How have you been able to leverage Instagram for yourself? And you know, not getting into specifics of strategy, but just an idea of how much value it's added to your business and to your brand equity in general.
Yeah. So as far as social media is concerned and the type of clientele that we have, almost everyone is on Instagram right now, and for some reason they are not on Facebook, or the engagement rates on Facebook is very, very low. So it's not a secret anymore that Instagram is the go-to platform for a lot of businesses, right? For specific type of
businesses. At least B2C businesses mostly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So as if you're a B2C business, Instagram is the go-to platform. The engagement rates are very, very high. It's just hip right now. So I don't know for how long it'll survive. So we don't have a Instagram strategy per se. We just make sure that amazing things happen at BoxFit, we capture them and put it on Instagram, and if our members like it, then they'll repost it.
Yeah.
Or we make sure that our studio, our experience is such that people want to capture it, and when they capture it, we repost it.
Yeah.
That is the only strategy that we have.
Yeah, it's also, again, like your in general business philosophy, it's very member centric, it's very focused on their experience and what they're doing in the studio.
So
right?
one thing we make sure is one don't that we have is we never try to sell it.
Yeah. Right?
Selling
it's organic, it's natural.
Yeah. We're just showing to the world what we're doing. If you like it, if you think you can add value to your life with this, please come in and we'll help you out. If you think Pilates is the answer for you or yoga is the answer for you, then you should be going
and doing that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we are not something for everyone. We are everything for some people.
I like that. So you're focused on a niche audience. You're focused on providing a good experience for the people that are interested in boxing.
Absolutely. And the thing is that a lot of people just see it and say, oh, this is the thing for me. Or they say, this is not the thing for me. But you don't know it till the time you don't try it.
Yeah.
You have to come and try it out. Then only you'll know if it's for you or not.
All right, guys, thanks so much for listening. We hope you gained something that helps you on your wellness journey. If you liked anything from this episode, please show us some love and subscribe or follow us. We'd love for you to be a part of this process. So write to us on our social media @MunchaPodcast. Thanks for listening, guys.